one of our friends was entering into a relationship where they had to hand over their passport, we'd be saying, get out of there, babe. What are you doing? So I think we've got to see these features as very, very, very well entrenched within the royal family itself. Now, as for, I think, you know, the how firm support for the monarchy is in this country, support for the abolition of the monarchy and the establishing of an elected head of state rose by plus 4 percentage points, according to a recent poll. And that is due to the Meghan Markle and Oprah interview. However, it's still very low. It's around a quarter of the population. And I think a big part of that is because for most of the country, we've only known the Queen when she's already quite old. And so she's been able to play into these images of almost grandmother of a nation. She also came to the throne in the 1950s when broadcast and televisual media is still kind of in its infancy. And so she solidified her reign at the same time.
We have 10 seconds, Ash.
As her image was being broadcast into our homes. So the legitimacy crisis, I think it's going to come when Prince Charles ascends to the throne, who's also meddled in one or two political matters, which a monarch really shouldn't do.
Ash Sarkar, I want to thank you very much. And we're going to link to your piece, How Harry and Meghan Quit the Royal Family to Join the U.S. Aristocracy. Ash Sarkar, senior editor at Navarra Media, and Tricia Goddard, British journalist and pioneering talk show host. That does it for our broadcast. I'm Amy Goodman. Stay safe. Wear a mask. Where to?
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
Hey, bluegrass lovers! Tune in Saturday, March 13th, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. for a very special quarantine version of the Bluegrass Marathon from your friends at Music from the True Vine.
This year's marathon will feature homespun, socially distanced recordings from Jack Straw,
Left Coast Country,
John Cale and Annie Stanenitz,
Caleb Clowder and Reeve Wilms,
Doug Sammons and Jeff Smith,
Farmstrong,
and many, many more.
Don't miss this unique radio event to catch up with your friends and neighbors, playing music and sharing stories from the lockdown.
Again, tune in to KBOO Saturday, March 13th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. for the Bluegrass Marathon.
Don't miss it.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Portland Mayor Ted Wheeler has asked for $2 million to fund a Portland Police Bureau response to the increase in gun violence. Governor Kate Brown has endorsed a sentence reduction plan for prisoners who fought last year's wildfires. And relief payments from the American Rescue Plan could begin arriving as early as this weekend. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, March 12th, 2021. I'm Nat Moon. Eligible Oregonians may begin seeing their $1,400 stimulus payment as early as this weekend for individuals who use direct deposit. The payments are part of the $1.9 trillion American Rescue Plan that was signed into law by President Biden on Wednesday. It's the third and largest direct stimulus payment since the start of the coronavirus pandemic a year ago. Individuals earning up to $75,000 and couples earning up to $150,000 will receive the payment of $1,400 per person, as well as an additional $1,400 for each dependent claimed on their tax returns. The plan also allows for temporarily expanded child tax credit of $3,000 per child ages 6 through 17 and $3,600 for children under 6. Congressional Democrats and the White House are hoping to find a way to make the enhanced child tax credit permanent. The plan also increases support for low-income families, additional funds for the Small Business Paycheck Protection Program, and emergency rental assistance and housing vouchers for people experiencing houselessness. The ARP extends the federal unemployment benefits of $300 per week through Labor Day. That's good news for more than 130,000 Oregonians who have already run out or are about to run out of unemployment benefits. The bill also makes the first $10,000 in unemployment non-taxable for households with incomes under $150,000 in 2020. But many have already filed their 2020 taxes or had taxes withheld from their unemployment checks. The IRS is reviewing the changes to the 2020 tax rules and plans to issue guidelines soon. The Oregon Department of Revenue said that those who have already filed their 2020 taxes will probably need to file an amended return to take full advantage of the ARP. They plan to release more information soon, but have advised taxpayers that have not filed to wait until the new guidelines are released. Governor Kate Brown is considering sentence reduction for prisoners who helped fight the wildfires last year. Under Brown's plan, prisoners may see up to 12 months cut from their sentence, which could result in an immediate release in some cases. In a statement, Brown spokesperson Elizabeth Mira said, quote, "The governor recognizes that adults in custody who participated on fire crews during the historic 2020 wildfire season served our state in a time of crisis." She went on to say that this is not part of the governor's early release program that's linked to the pandemic, but it's simply a one-time potential reduction in recognition of their contributions fighting the fires. Department of Corrections spokesperson Jennifer Black said that hundreds of incarcerated men and women had fought the fire and that 164 had been identified as eligible for sentence reduction. In addition to having worked the 2020 wildfire season, eligible individuals had to have a record of good conduct for 12 months, a post-release housing plan, and not be deemed a, quote, unacceptable safety, security, or compliance risk to the community. The review process will be completed in April, and district attorneys must notify the DOC if they have specific concerns related to a crime or an individual. Eligible prisoners who qualify for immediate release will be let out of prison after May 6th. Prison reform advocates responded favorably to Brown's offer to reduce the sentences of prisoners who fought fires. Shannon Wright of the Partnership for Safety and Justice said, quote, "It's the right way to use carrots, not just sticks, in our prisons." A state-sponsored coronavirus relief fund for Black Oregonians may be able to resume distributing grant money in the coming weeks. The Oregon Cares Fund distributed nearly $50 million to Black individuals, Black-owned businesses, and Black nonprofits last year. The fund was established when Oregon lawmakers set aside 4.5% of federal pandemic relief money received by the state. But a suit by the logging company Great Northern Resources said that the fund was violating the Equal Protection Clause of the U.S. Constitution by distributing government benefits on the basis of race. The suit, which was funded by conservative legal strategist Edward Bloom of the Project on Fair Representation, brought distribution of grant money to a halt with $9 million remaining. But earlier today, it was announced that the two sides had reached a settlement and that $5.3 million would become available for distribution as soon as the settlement is approved by a U.S. judge. The money would go to Black Oregonians and businesses that had been approved but had never received their grant. However, as part of the agreement, the state has also agreed to pay grants to as many as 1,252 non-Black applicants who applied before December 8th. The money will come from state funds. Oregon Senate Republicans have walked out of floor sessions three times over the last 2 years. The technique has been used to leave the Senate without the quorum required to proceed to a vote. In the state legislature, the Democrats hold a supermajority and can maintain a quorum, even if all the Republicans fail to show up. Senate Democrats, however, have no such luxury. They require a minimum Republican presence to conduct business at all. But yesterday, Democrats introduced a proposal that would have a financial impact on any senator who walks out in the future. The new proposal would allow the Senate president to fine state senators $151 if they are not excused and instead simply choose to not attend a session. The $151 is equal to their per diem payment for a session. Republicans complained that the Democrats had introduced a rule that would punish them for exercising their constitutional right to protest. But in a statement, Senate Majority Leader Rob Wagner responded, quote, "Walking out on Oregonians is unacceptable, and it's an affront to democracy. Even worse, when Senate Republicans walk out, they continue to accept a paycheck and compensation for their daily expenses." He went on to say, quote, "Voters in Oregon expect senators to be held accountable when they refuse to show up and do the work that Oregonians sent them to Salem to do." California, Oregon, and British Columbia all have guidelines in place to reduce the carbon intensity of fuel used in vehicles, but so far the state of Washington has failed to do so. For more on the story, here's Eric Tegedoff with the Public News Service.
State lawmakers are attempting to clean up Washington's fuel sources yet again this session. Efforts in the past few years to pass a clean fuel standard have failed, despite the fact that California, Oregon, and British Columbia all have guidelines in place to reduce the carbon intensity of fuel used in vehicles. Vlad Gutman-Britton, Washington State Director for the group Climate Solutions, notes the transportation sector accounts for 45% of the state's greenhouse gas emissions.
There just is no low-carbon future without a low-carbon transportation system, and more companies, more and more legislators, more and more people in general are recognizing that and want to get this program to the governor's desk as a result.
Companies like Puget Sound Energy and Amazon have come out in support of the bill. Opponents say it would increase gas and diesel prices, hitting folks in the transportation sector especially hard. The bill has passed the House and is scheduled for a hearing today in the Senate Committee on Environment, Energy, and Technology. Gutman-Britton says Washington already produces some renewable fuels and biofuels, but they're exported to California and Oregon because of their clean fuel standards.
We produce the biofuels, but the benefits are accruing to people in other states. And while I don't begrudge those benefits to Californians or Oregonians, I think Washingtonians should get me too.
Gutman-Britton believes there is the potential to produce more biofuels in Washington if the state adopts this standard. For instance, he says dairy operations could create renewable natural gas from waste.
You have to handle and manage the manure. You have to handle the agricultural waste, things like that. All of that stuff is now potentially a revenue producer because it can be converted and will be converted into a sustainable replacement for petroleum.
For Public News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Effective today, Multnomah County has joined Washington and Clackamas counties in the moderate risk coronavirus category. Under these guidelines, restaurants, gyms, and entertainment venues can begin to allow more people inside. At a press conference earlier today, Governor Kate Brown embraced Joe Biden's goal of vaccine availability to all adults by May 1st, but warned Oregonians not to get complacent and to continue to wear masks and follow social distancing guidelines. Restaurants and bars can now allow 50% capacity or up to 100 people, whichever is lower. But many local restaurants are still taking a cautious approach to the lower risk category. Some expressed concerns about the safety of both customers and staff and are still restricting indoor seating. Olympia Provisions executive chef Catherine Rowe told KPTV that they are still not allowing guests into the restaurant itself, but continue to seat customers in their atrium and outside. She said that knowing that restaurant workers can get vaccinated in the coming months gives some relief as business gets back to normal. According to Business Oregon, nearly 13,000 businesses closed at least temporarily in mid-2020. There's hope that many will be able to come back. And some restaurant and bar owners express optimism that there is significant pent-up demand, noting that federal programs have helped maintain incomes and the COVID restrictions kept many people from spending money. Yesterday, Portland Mayor Ted Wheeler announced he was asking for $2 million to fund a police patrol team to fight the growing wave of gun violence in the city. There have been over 200 shootings reported in Portland this year, and 15 of the 20 homicides in the city have been shootings. The gun deaths have been disproportionately impacting young Black and Brown residents, and the Interfaith Peace and Action Collaborative has been pushing city officials to take action to prevent more shootings. The collaborative is made up of clergy, social workers, police, and other community members who were opposed to last summer's cuts to the Portland Police Bureau's budget. In a statement, Collaborative Chair Matt Hennessy said that the budget cuts had, quote, created a vacuum that undermined public safety and the very communities whose voices the council and our community seek to amplify. The group asked for 5 detectives to investigate gun violence and more money for the recently formed 6-officer on-call team that responds to shootings around the clock. Their proposal is similar to a plan presented to the mayor by PPB Chief Chuck Lavelle in December. The new proposal immediately raised concerns that this was simply an attempt to recreate the gun violence reduction team that was disbanded last June when the city council cut $15 million from the police budget, which is over $200 million. But Wheeler defended the plan, saying that there would be key differences this time around. He pointed to a new community oversight committee that would collect and publish statistics on the team's arrests, stops, and outcomes, and help establish parameters for the police enforcement. An independent data analyst would be hired, and the committee would have no direct connection to either the city government or the PPB. City Commissioner Joanne Hardesty told Willamette Week, quote, I look forward to learning more as well as hearing other community proposals and deliberating any corresponding financial requests during the budget process. You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Coming up next at 5:30, it's Counterspin. At 6, it's Rising Up with Sana Lee. Then at 7, stay tuned for The Struggle with Alyssa Pariah. Tonight will be clear and dry with an overnight low in the high 30s. Tomorrow, we'll see a mixture of clouds and sun with a high of about 60. On this day in 1789, the United States Postal Service was established. Today's quote is from musician Henry Rollins, who said, quote, jazz music is as American as it gets, and so is the U.S. Postal Service. A Miles Davis stamp is a perfect marriage of two great American institutions. Minneapolis will pay $27 million in a civil settlement with George Floyd's family. The wrongful death lawsuit settlement also contains $500,000 for the neighborhood where Floyd was killed. This comes as the jury selection process continues in the trial of Floyd's murderer, former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin. For the latest on the murder trial of Derek Chauvin, we go to Faven Gerezgiher with the Racial Reckoning Project.
Thursday morning, third-degree murder charges were reinstated against Derek Chauvin in the killing of George Floyd. Presiding Judge Peter Cahill said he is bound by the precedent set by a recent Court of Appeals ruling.
Specifically, that murder in the third degree applies even if the person's intent and acts are directed at a single person.
Jury selection continued Thursday with approval of one additional juror. Those hoping for justice for George Floyd are skeptical they'll get it based on the current jury selection process. Earlier this week, lawyer and activist Nakima Levy Armstrong expressed concern that the selection process is unfairly filtering out communities of color.
We are seeing defense attorneys try to pick apart people of color who are showing up for jury duty, which is unacceptable. It is hard enough being a black person and a person of color living in Hennepin County, where we know the Hennepin County attorney time and time again has rubber stamped the conduct of killer cops.
Armstrong argues that the jury selection process, which emphasizes impartiality for a fair trial, often rules out the type of people who would press for a conviction charge.
We need people of color on the jury. We need black elders on the jury. We need people who have a history of understanding the context for what is happening in this country and how what happened to George Floyd is a perpetuation of the lynchings that black people experience time and time again.
Responding to a motion that one juror dismissal was racially motivated, Judge Cahill pointed out the juror's lack of impartiality. He also noted that half of the six selected jurors are people of color. For the Racial Reckoning Project, I'm Faven Garazguihar.
Nearly 40 million acres of public land are under lease for oil or gas extraction, and more than half are non-producing. The Department of the Interior is considering better ways to manage the lands and has scheduled a public forum on March 25th. For more on the story, here's Mark Richardson with the Public News Service.
The Biden administration has ordered the Interior Department to conduct a review of the federal government's oil and gas leasing program on public lands with an eye toward better management. About 38 million acres of onshore and offshore public lands are under lease, but critics say the program has been fraught for decades with organizational, financial, and environmental problems. Aaron Weiss with the Center for Western Priorities says the government isn't getting a fair financial return for taxpayers and has allowed the environmental degradation of America's public lands.
Our hope is that the administration comes forward with a set of recommendations on how to fully modernize the program so that we are fully accounting for the costs of oil and gas that is being extracted from America's public land.
Weiss says 3/4 of the oil and gas leases are non-producing, which prevents them from being used for other purposes. The Interior Department has scheduled a virtual forum on March 25th to gather public input for the review. Weiss thinks the government also needs to set and enforce stricter environmental regulations and address the mounting cleanup and remediation costs for abandoned wells, which he says are a major source of greenhouse gases.
Making sure that the existing laws and policies that are on the books are fully compliant with bedrock conservation laws like the Endangered Species Act, like the Clean Air Act, a combination of regulatory and legislative action.
The day-long forum will feature panels of industry representatives, labor and environmental groups and other experts. Weiss says he believes the leasing program needs a top-to-bottom overhaul.
Just the fees that they pay for leasing these public lands, those start at $1.50 an acre. So for the price of a cup of coffee, you can lock up acres of public lands and prevent them from being put to other use.
The Interior Department plans to release an interim report by early summer. More information on the review and how to participate in the live stream seminar will be posted soon at doi.gov. For Public News Service, I'm Mark Richardson.
Last night, President Biden unveiled the American Rescue Package in his first primetime speech since being sworn in. He called on the states to make sure that every American adult can get a vaccine by May 1st. With more on that story and others, here's Laura Rosborough-Tallum with 2021 Talks.
Welcome to 2021 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
I'm announcing that I will direct all states, tribes, and territories to make all adults, people 18 and over, eligible to be vaccinated no later than May 1.
During his first primetime address last night, President Joe Biden told the country he hopes everyone can celebrate independence from the virus with loved ones July 4th. And Biden highlighted the American Rescue Plan, which he signed earlier in the day. The $1.9 trillion COVID relief law includes direct aid to U.S. residents, support for vaccine distribution and school and restaurant reopening, an expansion of health care, and aid to minority farmers, among other priorities. Biden said he keeps a card in his pocket with the number of people who have passed from COVID.
Total deaths in America, 527,726. That's more deaths than in World War I, World War II, the Vietnam War, and 9/11 combined.
Kenyon Farrow, with Partners for Dignity and Rights, a social justice nonprofit, says a friend called him recently with important news about an activist and mentor.
She said, "Where are you? Are you sitting? Can you talk for a second? I have some serious news." And so I said, "Okay, I'm sitting. Like, what's going on?" And so she told me that Carmen had passed. You know, this is kind of cliche, but it was like a punch in the gut.
Farrow says Carmen Vasquez was both over 65 and Latina, groups that COVID has disproportionately impacted. The Georgia Secretary of State's office released another Trump election phone call, a recording of the then president talking to a Georgia chief elections investigator in December. The Wall Street Journal reported Trump encouraged the elections investigator to uncover, quote, dishonesty in absentee ballot signatures to reverse Trump's defeat by Joe Biden in the state. The Fulton County DA's office says the call will be part of an ongoing criminal probe into Trump's election interference. The House of Representatives passed two gun reform bills yesterday. One bill expands background checks for gun sales. The other tightens a loophole highlighted by the 2015 Charleston church shooting. Current law allows a gun sale without a background check if 3 business days have passed. The bill would change that to 10 business days. Democratic Representative Lucy McBath of Georgia gave emotional remarks during a press conference.
As a mother who lost her child to the very gun violence that every one of us has been fighting for so hard to eradicate, Speaker, I want to thank you.
Both bills face long odds in the Senate. Finally, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo is facing increased pressure to leave office. Most New York State legislators are calling for his resignation. There's an impeachment investigation, and there's a new groping allegation after numerous sexual harassment complaints. Cole Hemstreet contributed reporting. For Pacifica Network and Public News Service, I'm Laura Rosbrow-Tellum. Thanks for listening.
The $1.9 trillion stimulus package, known as the American Rescue Plan, includes housing assistance, support for language preservation, and funds for Indigenous education. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Indigenous news, issues, and culture.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Congress approved the $1.9 trillion COVID-19 relief bill Wednesday. With House passage, the American Rescue Plan is off to the president's desk to sign. Nationwide, the bill provides $1,400 stimulus checks, mounts a national vaccination program, extends unemployment insurance, and reopens schools. Investments in Indian country include housing assistance, resources for language preservation, and Indian education relief funds. The president is set to speak Thursday about moving the nation forward in a primetime speech. Native people are encouraged by Deb Haaland to see what impact she'll have, as she's likely to be the next Secretary of the Interior. Many are closely watching her confirmation process play out. A leader of a national Native organization is hopeful, as Roz Brown reports.
Native American educators say tribal representation at the highest levels of government will likely encourage more civic engagement and trust in the government. If New Mexico Representative Deb Haaland is approved for the position of Interior Secretary, she would become the nation's first Native American cabinet secretary and oversee the Bureau of Indian Education. Cheryl Crazy Bull, president of the Denver-based American Indian College Fund, says only about 20% of 18 to 24-year-old Native American students are enrolled in college, compared with 41% of the overall U.S. population. She says it's time they see themselves more broadly represented.
So I view having a Native person in that Secretary of Interior role as just vital to being able to develop better education.
The latest data shows that only 16% of Native Americans attain a bachelor's degree or higher, and only 9% attain associate degrees. Crazy Bull says the case can be made for a system that is more responsive to the specific needs of Native students.
Education in tribal communities is really about upholding identity. So her policies and practice around land and resource use, sacred site, all of those things things will impact the education environment for our communities.
In addition to the Bureau of Indian Education, Indian Affairs, the Department of Interior under Holland would oversee about 500 million acres of public land and federal policies affecting the 574 federally recognized tribal governments. This is Roz Brown.
The Navajo Nation is implementing a soft reopening as COVID-19 cases decline and vaccinations continue. On Wednesday, a new public health order was issued, bringing the Navajo Nation down from red status to orange. Revised guidelines include a safer at-home order, daily curfews from 9 to 5, and updated provisions for businesses and gatherings. Most businesses will be allowed to open at a 25% capacity, including casinos in Arizona and New Mexico, which have been closed since March of 2020. Dr. Jill Jim, Navajo Department of Health Director, spoke about the new plans during a special town hall Wednesday night.
Navajo casinos are allowed to open to the Navajo Nation residents and employees only. So either you have to be a Navajo Nation resident or a Navajo Nation employee of some sort can be allowed to access the casino at 25%. All other businesses, youth programs, museums, flea markets, roadside markets, gyms, recreation facilities, and movie theaters are not open yet. But we'll be carefully monitoring a lot of these throughout the next couple of weeks as everyone is going down into a lower lower numbers. We need to keep these down. And that's why we have gating measures.
The tribe will monitor COVID-19, and if trends change, leaders say they'll revisit public health orders. The new orders go into effect on Monday. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, March 12th, 2021. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast is Althea Billings, Ray Bodwell,